Thank you for joining us today on Healthcare Highwire. Today is the Director of Nursing Leadership Series, learning to be good communicators with strong clinical knowledge and leadership skills.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the LCS Director of Nursing Leadership Series. I'm Sandy Toole, and today we're going to be discussing abuse and neglect reporting and investigating. I'm joined by my colleague, Linda Elder. Hey, Linda, how are you today? Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Sandy. I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Well, that was a great presentation you gave at the Director of Nursing Leadership Meeting on March 27th. That was just such great, important information and certainly an important topic. Could you start off by telling us today just what is the definition of abuse according to CMS?
Yes, by CMS, definition of abuse is the willful infliction of injury, unreasonable confinement, intimidation, or punishment with resulting physical harm, pain, or mental anguish. This also includes the deprivation by an individual, including a caretaker of goods or services, that are necessary to attain or maintain physical, mental, and psychosocial well-being. The definition of willful by CMS means that the individual acted deliberately, not that the individual must have intended to inflict injury or harm. So for example, if you deliberately did not answer the call light, or you took the call light away, but you did not intend for a resident to fall, this would still be considered neglect because you deliberately did not answer the call light and the resident fell. The abuse can be staff to resident, resident to resident, or visitor to resident. When determining abuse, it is helpful for the communities to use the surveyor critical element pathways. The different types of abuse are verbal, physical, sexual, mental, neglect, corporal punishment, and involuntary seclusion.
Well, thank you for that very thorough definition. Now, I got to go back for a second. I really like that example you gave. So a fall occurs and the individual maybe suffers a fracture. I knew the call light was on, but I just ignored it or just didn't answer it. Wow, you never really think of that as abuse. So I think that's really good information to include as part of abuse and neglect education, because I hate to say it, but that does happen in real life. Now, could you go into further detail about allegations and some possible situations that could be considered abuse?
Yes. An individual who reports an alleged violation to facility staff does not have to explicitly characterize the situation as abuse, neglect, mistreatment, or exploitation in order to trigger the federal requirements of this regulation. So for instance, if a resident reported to you that someone was being rough with them but did not use the word abuse, you still need to investigate this because it could be abuse. The federal requirement states that if facility staff could reasonably conclude that the potential exists for noncompliance with the federal requirements related to mistreatment, exploitation, neglect, or abuse, including injuries of unknown source and misappropriation of resident property, then it would be considered to be reportable under this regulation. So I wanted to share some examples that would meet these requirements. You have a family that is upset that someone took their loved one's gold necklace and their call light wasn't answered last night. So the loved one's gold necklace would be considered misappropriation, and the call light not being answered could be considered neglect. You have a confused resident saying another resident hit her during lunch, but staff didn't see it happen. It does not matter if the resident is confused. Anytime there's an allegation, we still need to report and investigate. A patient had an unwitnessed fall and was sent to the ER with a head injury. An insurance letter was emailed to the facility stating while at the facility, the resident was sexually abused. The resident was discharged a month ago. It does not matter if the resident is currently active at the community. If the allegation occurred while the resident was at the facility, it needs to be reported as soon as the community becomes aware of the allegation. If APS comes in to investigate a complaint of poor care, resident not receiving showers, and resident left in soiled clothing for a long period of time, you would want to report this as an allegation of neglect. If an allegation meets the definition of abuse, neglect, exploitation, or mistreatment, the facility should not make an initial determination whether the allegation is credible before reporting the allegation. So what this means is you don't make assumptions. If you have a resident that has made false allegations in the past, you still need to report and investigate. So now that we've discussed possible scenarios, we should discuss abuse policies and what the federal requirements are for them.
Oh, well, I can touch on that, Linda. You know, your abuse policy is requested on every survey, and the surveyors will also ask your personnel about the steps to follow if they suspect abuse or witness some type of abuse. At LCS, we have endorsed the Heaton policies, and this is where you can find the most current abuse policy. You want to make sure that your abuse policy contains all 7 required components. And those 7 are screening. You want to make sure that you've done appropriate screening of your personnel and that you're using the state registry looking for history of abuse. You want to make sure you have training addressed, staff training on the prevention of abuse and recognizing symptoms of abuse. Prevention. Does your policy address the abuse prevention, addressing provisions of care and needs and services, safe environment, trained qualified staff, etc.? Does your policy address identification? Your policy must include identifying signs and symptoms of abuse, such as suspicious injuries, injuries that aren't in areas generally near where you would hit an arm or an abrasion. And your policy needs to include investigation, conducting thorough investigations of the allegations. Protection. You have to protect residents during the investigation, and you need to have an immediate suspension of any personnel if personnel were involved. And then finally, number 7, you want to make sure your policy addresses reporting. Reporting to the appropriate state agency, the physician, the resident representative. Now, anytime you have abuse occur, or even an abuse allegation, you should make it a general practice to review your abuse prevention policy and to re-educate all personnel on your abuse prevention plan.
Thanks, Sandy. Now let's dive into reporting considerations. The F609 regulation states to ensure that all alleged violations involving abuse, neglect, exploitation, or mistreatment, including injuries of unknown source and misappropriation of resident property, are reported immediately, but not later than 2 hours after the allegation is made, if the events that cause the allegation involve abuse or result in serious bodily injury. If the allegation does not involve abuse and does not result in serious bodily injury, you have no later than 24 hours to report that allegation. It is important to note that even if a staff member knows of an abuse allegation and reports it to the administrator late, but the administrator reports it immediately, the facility is still out of compliance for not reporting timely. Some states have specific guidelines for reporting. This will usually be found on the state agency's website, and you want to be sure you know your state reporting guidelines. It's a good idea to discuss reportable events with your clinical specialist prior to reporting as an added support to your decision. We're always more than happy to help review investigations and provide feedback prior to submitting. Reporting the event to us serves no purpose after the fact. Your DOM may also want to be involved prior to reporting events to the state agency as well. And oftentimes, it might be necessary to involve LCS risk management to assist in any potential litigious situations. The self-reported incidents will also be known as complaints according to the state, and that is how they will be classified if the state comes in to visit. These self-reported events have been cause for many conversations between the industry and prosecutors and defense attorneys, as there is no leniency even when you report the issue yourself.
Well, wait a minute. So, Linda, are you saying if the state comes in to survey the reported incident that we reported and we corrected everything, the community is still going to be cited?
Unfortunately, yes. If the abuse is substantiated, even if you addressed it prior to being investigated, you still will be receiving a deficiency, and oftentimes a fine is involved when it involves abuse.
Wow, that is good information to know. Now, I want to go back just a minute and emphasize what you said about that time frame for reporting. The language in F609 for reporting is a little confusing the way it is worded. It states that all alleged violations involving abuse, neglect, exploitation, or mistreatment, including injuries of unknown source and misappropriation of resident property, are reported immediately, but not later than 2 hours after the allegation is made, comma, if the events that cause the allegation involve abuse or result in serious bodily injury. I think there's so much confusion because this is a really long sentence and the comma is in a certain place that people kind of read that and disregard the part about the 2 hours if an allegation is made. So I hope we've really driven this home with our listeners that that 2 hour notification is really important there. So are there any considerations regarding the reporting process that communities should know?
Yes, and thank you for clarifying that 2 hours. That is very important. So you have the initial report, which is going to be a brief description of the incident, naming the residents and staff involved, if applicable, any injury sustained, and what action did the facility take to respond to the event to protect that resident, and then what did we do to prevent further occurrence when the investigation is in process. The online reporting system is different per state, so you'll want to make sure you know how to complete that in your state. Your follow-up report is due within 5 working days of the incident. And again, your state will often have specific information and tools that you will use for reporting incidents. You're going to want to report the results of the investigation, any plan of action or intervention to prevent reoccurrence, the method the facility will monitor the corrective action, and other agencies that were notified. Your state requirements define what events are to be reported outside of the federal reports of mistreatment, neglect, abuse, misappropriation of resident property. It is your responsibility to know your state requirements. You'll want to provide as much detailed information in your investigation as possible to show that a thorough investigation was completed. Some examples of state-required reporting guidelines would be unusual death, utility interruptions, med errors, equipment malfunctions, and poisoning.
I agree, Linda, that it's very imperative for communities to know their state requirements for reporting, as every state does vary. Keeping in mind that we have to follow the federal regulations, and then each state has the ability to pile on another layer if they choose to do so. I think it's a great idea to keep this information handy for quick review when determining if something meets that requirement for reporting. So let's see, once a community is aware of an allegation, then what are the next steps?
Thanks for that question, Sandy. Firstly, you want to ensure the safety of the resident. An observation of the residents involved with a head-to-toe evaluation and a psychosocial assessment should be conducted immediately. Monitoring for psychosocial distress and signs and symptoms of an injury should continue for a minimum of 72 hours. You'll also want to review the environment and any interactions between staff and residents on the unit. You'll want to conduct interviews with the alleged victim and all potential witnesses, asking open-ended questions. You'll want to review the staff attendance records from any department to determine who was working at the time of the allegation, who may have had access to the resident and/or the resident's room to collect information on whether they had any knowledge of the allegation and what actions, if any, they took in response to the allegation, if they have observed any changes in the resident's behavior as a result of the allegation, whether an individual has been identified as the alleged perpetrator, and how the alleged perpetrator and resident related to one another prior to and after the incident. You will want to review employee files if there was an employee identified as the alleged perpetrator. You want to make sure that the reference checks, application, that their license is active and unencumbered, that their competencies and job description have been completed, and when their last in service on abuse was. You will also want to review all witness statements and any applicable reports, such as police or hospital reports. Finally, you want to put corrective action into place to ensure this does not recur. Action to prevent further occurrences depends on the type of event. Immediate actions to prevent another occurrence will need to be put into place until you complete the investigation. You'll also want to make sure that if any other residents were affected, that we put interventions into place for them. These interventions will be based on identified causative factors. You'll want to develop an individualized intervention with an IDT approach, update and implement the care plan, and train and educate your staff on the changes. You'll want to review and update your policies and procedures as applicable.
Well, thank you for that very detailed explanation. Now, here's another thing. Could you just talk about some possible scenarios that could cause an abuse citation?
Yeah, of course. So some examples of abuse that create the likelihood for serious psychosocial harm or immediate jeopardy to a resident include, but are not limited to, sexual assault, such as rape, unwanted sexual touching, sexual harassment, any staff to resident physical, sexual, or mental verbal abuse, staff posting or sharing demeaning or humiliating photographs or videos of residents. When facility staff, as punishment, threaten to take away the resident's rights, privileges, or preferred activities, or withhold care from the resident. Any resident-to-resident physical abuse that is likely to result in fear or anxiety that is above the resident's baseline. So those would be immediate jeopardy. A community is at risk for receiving a G level or higher if the surveyors determine that a reasonable person would likely suffer actual harm as a result of the incident. For instance, a reasonable person would not expect that they would be harmed in his or her own home or a healthcare facility and would therefore experience a negative psychosocial outcome. An example of this would be a resident slapped another resident in the face because they were talking too loudly. The resident that was slapped had a red spot on his face, but no other injury, and later could not recall the incident. However, the resident's son stated the resident would have been mad after an incident like this. Therefore, they likely would experience a negative psychosocial outcome. For severity level 2, some examples would include a facility failing to protect a resident from verbal abuse. During an interview with the resident, she mentioned that she does not get along with another resident. The other resident called her a derogatory name. Even though the resident did not have a reaction, it can be determined that the reasonable person would experience no actual harm, but would have potential for more than minimal harm as a result of the verbal abuse. And severity level 1 does not apply for this regulatory requirement, as the failure of the facility to prevent abuse or neglect will always be more than minimal harm.
Well, again, this is great information. I think, you know, one thing I would recommend, Linda, is that everybody go back and read in the state operations manual that definition of psychosocial harm and look at that psychosocial severity grid really closely. You have given some excellent examples here, and some of them seem unlikely that you would receive a deficiency for it. Even if the resident doesn't realize something happened, a reasonable person would have felt it, and so thus the deficiency happens. So please go back and read all that information in the SOM. I think that's really important. Well, lastly, I think we should try to touch on the abuse icon and what situations would cause a community to receive this icon on the Nursing Home Compare website.
Yes, so as you know, Sandy, the abuse icon was added to Nursing Home Compare consumer site in October of 2019. The purpose was to allow consumers to clearly see who has been cited for abuse in the last year or over the last 2 years, depending upon severity. To receive the abuse icon, you would have had to have a harm level, scope and severity level G or higher abuse citation on the most recent standard survey cycle or complaint survey within the past 12 months, or an abuse citation where residents were found to be potentially harmed with a scope and severity level of a D, E, or F on the most recent standard survey cycle or complaint survey within the past 12 months and on the previous standard survey cycle or complaint survey in the prior 12 months.
That's good information too. I think a lot of us forget about that abuse icon. It only happens if there are deficient practices in F600, F602, and F603. You know, there are 9 F tags associated with abuse, but only those 3 really are applicable for this hand abuse icon. And the other implication, of course, is that the best overall 5-star rating a community can have with that hand icon is 4 stars. Well, this has been great information, Linda. I really want to thank you for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you, Sandy. It's great to be with you. I do want to let the communities know they can reach out anytime to their clinical specialist if they have any questions regarding this topic. We are always happy to assist.
And I want to thank all of you for listening. We hope you found this information beneficial. This is Sandy Toole and Linda Elder signing off. We look forward to the next Director of Nursing Leadership Series podcast, and I hope you can join us next time on Healthcare Highwire.
Thank you for joining us today on Healthcare Highwire and the Director of Nursing Leadership Series.